Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Wayne White, who is a scholar at the Middle East Institute, specializing in a number of Middle Eastern countries. He is a policy expert at the Middle East Policy Council and was an expert advisor on the Iraq Study Group. He previously served as Deputy Director of the State Department Bureau of Intelligence and Research's Office of Analysis for the Near East and South Asia, the State Department's representative to NATO Middle East Working Groups, and as a senior regional analyst. He also served as a State Department intelligence analyst on Libya. Welcome to Background Briefing, Wayne White.
Thank you.
And the President appearing today with the British Prime Minister, David Cameron, of course, was asked about Benghazi, which has been essentially a political fiction largely ginned up by Fox News from day one. But finally, Fox News, thanks to some testimony recently, feel as if they've got some vindication here and justification for this inflated non-story. And the president tried to slap it down again today. Do you think it can be put to rest, or is this transgressed into the area of political fiction and partisan politics?
Well, I think it has long since strayed into the area of political theater, and it's in pursuit of an agenda, and it has whipped up quite a tremendous response in the blogosphere and everywhere else, and so I don't think this thing's going to die anytime soon at all, particularly because certain marginal aspects of this story are being mistaken as critical or central to what happened.
Well, I guess the marginal aspects are that the testimony that took place recently by the Deputy Chief of Mission, where he indicated there were flaws, and prior to that, there was, of course, Thomas Pickering and Admiral Mullen, the former Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, put out a very scathing attack on these flaws. There was nothing particularly new in the testimony that the Republican Chair, Darrell Issa, put on to justify the Fox News talking points. But there was enough in that to keep this story alive. So just go through some of the points that you find to be at odds with truth and reality.
Well, first off, it's the talking point controversy, which, after all, led all the other aspects of this story from the get-go, back in the hours and days right after the incident. This is not critical. You know, the talking points, whether they said terrorism, they didn't say terrorism, I really don't think affected much at all. Is it embarrassing to change talking points that you said you didn't change, even if the changes were not critical? Of course. But as far as anything substantial, that really isn't the center of this. And also some, I think, remarks are being read a bit too deeply that also shouldn't be. For example, during the hearing, it seemed that there seems to be this impression that because Ambassador Stevens, because Chris said that he was under attack, he had very, very brief communications. Greg, the consul's under attack, and then I think he said that we're under attack, and the other. Well, this was a desperate guy, you know, who was concentrating on what was happening around him, not somebody who was on the phone to explain the nature of the attack, but yet people have jumped to the conclusion that that meant it was terrorism, which I find absolutely astounding. Essentially, Chris wasn't saying anything in that except he was under attack, and in fact may have been even more concerned about his much larger mission in Tripoli. You know, where Greg Hicks was as Deputy Chief of Mission, and that get battened down just in case something should happen there. There's nothing we can read into Chris's quite desperate and clipped remarks. The other thing is the fact that the military the military response has come into tremendous scrutiny, and, you know, the notion of getting jets over Benghazi, you know, was a critical, not getting jets there was a critical failure when in a situation where you're involved in a close-in event where the people attacking are only feet away from where you are, isn't a place where a combat jet interferes can do much in order to get at the problem without sort of slathering the whole neighborhood around the consulate with ordnance, which would have killed hundreds of civilians. And the same goes for the annex. Since it was under mortar fire from an unknown and perhaps multiple unknown locations and with a range of several hundred yards, what were you going to do? Just pound that whole neighborhood and reduce it to ashes in order to get at the attackers, which might, by the way, have provoked a devastating rebound effect and had the embassy in Tripoli under attack somewhat later. Similarly, putting a team down on the ground fast is something very dicey because think of Black Hawk Down, that you could have actually put a team, for example, in the annex when it's under mortar fire and had members of the team become casualties. So we could have actually magnified the problem. And so these notions that there was some kind of cavalry that could have rushed to the relief of this situation and prevented our losses, is very naive, and it's sort of what Bob Gates called cartoonish, a cartoonish caricature of our military capabilities, and that's really been upsetting to me because I know a lot about that side of the issue, and I know that once this had already started, and particularly how fast events unfolded at the embassy itself, that really wasn't much of a factor.
Again, I'm speaking with Wayne White, who's a scholar at the Middle East Institute, specializing in a number of Middle Eastern countries. He's a policy expert at the Middle East Policy Council and was an expert advisor on the Iraq Study Group. He also served as a State Department intelligence analyst on Libya and was the deputy director of the State Department's Bureau of Intelligence and Researchers Office for Analysis for the Near East and South Asia. Now, you knew the ambassador well, who died. And the other thing that was seized upon by Republicans in the testimony from the deputy chief of mission was that there was another team in Washington that could have come in and somehow rescued them, like the cavalry. But that team that he was referring to is actually a forensic team, which comes in later to do analysis after the event. So why didn't some of the Democrats on the, or Elijah Cummings, the minority chair, why did they bring this up? And why did they let all this stuff go out without challenging it?
Well, that's been very upsetting. Watching the hearings was distressing to me because I did not see anyone trying to put context into either our military response, or should I say the difficulty in carrying that out, or the deployment of the what was called the FEST or FEST team, Foreign Emergency Support Team, which again is largely an FBI team, which simply secures and exploits crime scenes, or for what you want of another explanation. And so you're not going to send a FEST team into Benghazi to rescue anyone. They come in after the fact. I worked with them in the bombing of the Cole when we sent our teams in, and one of the concerns is you don't send that team in until the coast is clear. And remember the long delay between that team reaching Tripoli after this these terrible events, and then not going on to Benghazi because of these security concerns. It was days and days and days, if not 2 weeks or so, before they actually secured what was by that time a greatly disturbed crime scene. But that was essentially irrelevant to what was going on at the time, but yet that was made into a big issue at the hearing, the frustration in getting that team going. Now, that probably would have been good to get it going, but at that time, it would have been to be picking up the pieces, not rescuing anyone. But yet, I'll bet probably 50% of the viewers came away with the impression that that also had something to do with a possible rescue that was not taken advantage of.
And Wayne White, obviously there is criticism that one could level, and unfortunately a lot of it is at your friend who died, the former ambassador, because ambassadors are in charge of everything in country. And he chose to go, I believe, to Benghazi, a largely personal trip, ostensibly to open a book fair, which it doesn't sound like in a country that's in that kind of chaos on the very day of 9/11 was a particularly good idea. And it's also pretty clear that Victoria Nuland at the State Department did massage the talking points for Susan Rice, that the CIA basically laid it on the line that it wasn't a terrorist attack, and they took that out perhaps to protect Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's legacy. But still, that small change, and the long and the short of it is that, well, is it possible that one of the problems we have here is that nobody really wants to go after a dead guy, and that that's giving the Republicans room to maneuver?
Well, I think I would prefer not to comment about Chris and why he was there. It was unfortunate because he was at our least well-defended facility on a day that could very well have become a problem day, because it was the 10th anniversary, and groups do take advantage of this for salient attacks and what have you. It would have been so much better if he had been bunkered down in Tripoli. In fact, I would be concerned myself, although this is, you know, just this is just me, I would be concerned now thinking back over all this that maybe even a terrorist attack was more likely because they learned Chris was there and they had a high value target. But anyway, that aside from all that, the talking points just don't really matter. But at the time, you know, I actually could sort of imagine why somebody would massage those talking points away from that issue. It seems foolish, and I thought it was foolish at the time. But the Republicans had already begun staking out a case that because something bad happened in Benghazi, something terrible had happened in Benghazi, all the assertions of the administration concerning terrorism and the importance of taking out Osama bin Laden and many, many, many other critical Al-Qaeda operatives was irrelevant, and that, you know, nothing had been accomplished. And so they used one incident, you know, to create a generality, which was a tremendous distortion. And I really think if there was distortion in the, if there was tampering, I mean, there was, this tampering could very well have been because of that hypersensitivity to what you could see the other side in the election was doing. The administration never really made a good case for why, even though it's easy to do, why one thing going wrong in one place, which was well known to be unstable, had no bearing on global terrorism policy, except to say terrorism is out there and we can't get everyone.
Well, that's why I think the president today, speaking with the British Prime Minister, where he basically dismissed this Benghazi story and essentially called it a sideshow and accusations of a cover-up defy logic. But he did, of course, point out to the fact that the next day he himself referred to it as an act of terrorism.
I wish he had not used, frankly, the words sideshow, because I can just see that being taken out of context and laid next to everything that happened in Benghazi, not properly securing that mission, bolstering its security earlier, or abandoning the mission after earlier attacks on diplomats, you know, out there, other diplomats, that gave us some warning of trouble in Benghazi. In other words, I can just see people chopping out the words and saying he just dismissed everything about Benghazi as a sideshow, which, of course, you and I know he didn't do.
Well, there's no way to put this to rest then. I mean, except perhaps to bring back Ambassador Pickering and the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Admiral Mullen, to another round of Darrell Issa's inquiry. And he's made no secret of the fact that Issa is that he sees White House misbehavior and chicanery at every turn. And there's no question that he's on this kind of jihad. Could you have them back? Could you have Pickering back and Mullen back? Because their report actually was more devastating than even the new talking points that they've seized on from the deputy chief of mission who testified recently. And then
it might be a mixed blessing to have Tom Pickering back because he's a really sharp guy. And he might be able to create some more nuances and to, you know, cut out some of this, the fluff from this and get to the hard issues. In fact, he was on, I watched him, he was on with Darrell Issa on Sunday, and in that interview, I think Meet the Press, he talked to Issa about this and said, you know that the purpose of my investigation was not to track down talking point, you know, manipulation and things like that. The express purpose and mission of my investigation was to see how we could prevent such things from happening again, how we could do it better. And theirs was a core focus on the basic security issues that are the basis of what should be looked at in the case of Benghazi. What should have been done at that mission? What wasn't done? What other mission improvements throughout the world can prevent other Benghazis, or at least make them less likely? He really came back and said, you know, that wasn't the question we were asked, so of course we didn't go into that.
Right, but the bottom line is that the Republicans smell blood in the water. Fox News feel that they've been vindicated by beating the drum on this non-story for months. And is there anything that can be done? I mean, clearly they want to taint Hillary Clinton for 2016. That's pretty obvious.
I don't think there is anything to be done because, again, they have already taken issues that I think are marginal to the core issue of the core issues of this tragedy and built them up into the main issues of the tragedy, like the talking point issue, which should have been, frankly, the least of our concerns, as opposed to what the Pickering Commission was focused on, which was what should we be doing? We don't want this to happen again. We don't want this to happen in another one of our, you know, consulates or missions. Even though, of course, in this case, we had just set up out there. And so it would have been practically impossible to have a well-defended consulate. We didn't even have a consulate at the time. It was provisional. In fact, it was mainly a CIA operating station out there. Another thing that probably should be explored more about what part that might have played in it. But anyway, there's no way to get away from it because they have successfully built up many of the extraneous issues as core issues and neglected the core issues, neglected to clarify military realities, neglected to clarify that the most important things were security, before the fact. Once this had started, I don't see any way, knowing what I know about our response times and having seen similar situations, there was probably almost no way to get out of that situation without tragic casualties. I think, frankly, again, when Chris was on the phone with those very short, you know, statements, he was really trying to convey to Greg, we're under attack, to let him know what was going on as deputy chief of mission, not necessarily that he believed, you know, he could be extracted by some, you know, intervention that was way off, and also to protect Tripoli. He would have been thinking of his other people in Tripoli and protecting the rest of his people. That I knew Chris, and that was his, you know, prime concern. He didn't have time to explain who was outside in detail.
Well, just in closing, Wayne White, clearly there's anarchy in Libya, and you've got this deadly car bombing that just hit Benghazi, a bunch of
right.
children were killed. You've got all these Mad Max guys driving around in pickups with heavy machine guns. It seems to be a place in flux without a government and in a painful process of building one. Is this an excuse? I mean, the reality of Libya, is that something that again, the Democrats could have made a better case for? Not that it's a shining example of successful intervention to bring democracy.
In fact, I would have been, if I was one of his colleagues, I would have been very indignant the way John McCain has hammered down, you know, on all of this when he was one of the main proponents, I believe the leading Republican opponent, of going into Libya at a time when other Republicans wanted to stay out for mainly budgetary reasons. He was the one who also knows. He even visited has been in Benghazi. He also knows how risky our intervention was and how risky the aftermath has been in terms of that country getting itself back together again after a destructive civil war, and that a person who was aware of all this should then act as if something like this happening in Benghazi was something that was utterly out of the blue. That strikes me as terribly, terribly wrong.
Well, Wayne White, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you very much.
Again, I've been speaking with Wayne White, who's a scholar at the Middle East Institute, specializing in a number of Middle East countries. He is a policy advisor at the Middle East Policy Council and was an expert advisor on the Iraq Study Group. He previously served as Deputy Director of the State Department's Bureau of Intelligence and Research's Office of Analysis for the Near East and South Asia, the State Department's representative to NATO Middle East Working Groups, and as a senior regional analyst. He also served as a State Department intelligence analyst on Libya. And we're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about the IRS's attempts to flag Tea Party and Patriot groups.